Welcome to another episode of the Real Estate Gals Podcast. Sharon Vornholt is your host and the creator of the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, where you will learn how to become a savvy real estate investor, make money, build streams of passive income, and create a lifestyle and a business you love. Whether you're a seasoned real estate investor or just getting started, this show is for you. Now, let's talk real estate investing.
This is Sharon Vornholt with the Louisville Gals Real Estate Blog, here today with another episode of Let's Talk Real Estate Investing. My guest today is Daniel Klayman. Now, Daniel is a real estate investor from Richmond, Virginia, and he's the founder of two real estate-related companies, Evolve Acquisitions, which is his real estate company, and True Vision Analytics, which focuses on helping real estate investors evaluate and market their deals. And I know one of his products that I'm familiar with is a great tool called the Rehab Valuator. So we're going to talk about Daniel's business, about this tool, and we're going to find out if he's got anything else up his sleeve there. So thanks for coming on the show today, Daniel.
You're welcome. Well, thanks for having me on.
Well, I think I told you this, wanting to have you on for quite a while, but let's start off by having you tell everybody a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Well, I won't take too much time, but I'll give you the cliff notes. I guess it's a typical rags to riches or mild riches or story that people are used to hearing. You know, I grew up in Russia. I moved here with my family when I was 12 years old. We immigrated here. To Virginia, and I grew up in Virginia. I went to University of Virginia. Got my undergraduate degree there at the undergraduate business school. Then I ended up spending about straight from college. I went to Wall Street. So my background is as a financial analyst and bond trader. I spent 6 years kind of hopping around different Wall Street banks, Merrill Lynch, J.P. Morgan. I worked for a French bank for a while, and my specialty was in bond sales, bond trading, and then it became bond structuring. So my background focused on kind of heavy financial modeling, which later became pretty useful when I got into real estate. So I'm basically numbers geek. That's now evolved into swinging a hammer occasionally and actually dealing with real properties. So I spent 6 years on Wall Street. My last job was at Bear Stearns, and I don't know if people listening to your podcast or if you yourself sort of remember 2008 and when the market crashed, but Bear Stearns was a very old, big money, sort of venerable Wall Street institution that nobody ever thought could go bankrupt or go out of business. Well, it did, and I was just sort of beginning my career and having some success, and I did everything right. But as having a job goes, usually things can very quickly get out of control, and it's never really under your control, things that happen to you. So you can do everything right, but if you're working for somebody else, outside circumstances unfortunately can impact the company, and you can be doing a wonderful job and you can still be out of a job very quickly. So that's what happened to me. Well, market crashed, you know, housing bubble burst, Bear Stearns overnight went out of business, and I ended up being laid off, and at that point I've had interest in real estate for a few years by that point. I was already buying properties part-time with a partner in Virginia, and at that point I said, you know, I don't want another job. I'm not going to go look for work. I think it's time to do something else. And so looking back on it, getting laid off was probably one of the best things that could have ever happened to me, because it led me into into real estate and working for myself and doing really, really fun things. So I moved back to Virginia in 2009 and started the two companies that I run right now, and both have grown pretty quickly, and so here I am. Hopefully that wasn't too long or too boring.
Well, no, that's very interesting because, boy, do I remember 2008. That's exactly when the market crashed here, and I was closing one business at that time and had just decided to go into real estate full-time. So, but boy, that was a tumultuous time, and I cannot tell you how many people I have talked to in the past few years who say the same thing. Their lives were greatly impacted by 2008, and some of them were in the mortgage business, some of them were in banking, but they all had to do with money, and a lot of them had to do with some subsidiary of real estate, but they took their financial skills, and their being a numbers guy is a great thing in real estate, and they took that knowledge, and they have very quickly grown big businesses, so I commend you for that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's just a matter of being able to adapt. The world really changed when the bubble burst and the market crashed, and we all know a lot of people that lost everything, and some of those people have been able to rebound and come back stronger than ever, and unfortunately that hasn't been the story for everyone, but you know, you just have to look at bad things that happen to you as opportunities to reinvent yourself and to do something else. So,
well, I think you're absolutely right about that. And well, and one thing that really intrigues me about what you do is that you do big renovation products on in historic areas. So we're going to talk about that, but it's my understanding you do the big renovation projects, and then you hold them for long-term rentals, and that you focus on single family and multifamilies. Is that the case?
Yeah, and I primarily focus on residential. I just finished a commercial project, and I'm looking at a couple of other ones, but primarily for the last 5 years I've been focusing on residential. The deals have been just so juicy in the residential space, at least in my market, that it was just a no-brainer. So right now I'm still renovating a lot of single-family homes. I started doing new construction this past year, which I've never done before, but now my business is starting to pretty heavily lean into new construction versus renovation, and we can talk about that and why I like new construction better if you want. And I'm primarily still doing renovation projects, only projects that allow me to do historical tax credits.
Okay. Yeah, and I want to talk about the new construction in a minute. So you started out with single-family homes, and did you go into and add those multifamilies on purpose, or did you just happen upon a good deal?
So, you know, residential was just easier to get started.
Right.
The absolute dollar amounts of deals are obviously smaller. It's easier to handle the renovations. It's just easier to wrap your head around. So I mean, and that's why I think most people that get started in this business, they start in residential and then they slowly transition to commercial. There's obviously been people that have gone straight into commercial, but it's a little bit harder. The investment required is obviously bigger, and the scope of work if you're developing or if you're renovating is obviously more complicated as well. So, you know, back in late 08, 09, the deals that I was getting on single family homes, the REOs that I was able to buy, I mean, it was just a no-brainer, and nobody was buying. Nobody was buying. I look back on the market of, you know, 2009 through 2011, and I have tears in my eyes because I wish those days were here again. You know, I know it's terrible to say that I wish we see another crash, but man, yeah, if I had the money back then that I have now to invest, and if I could go back and buy as much real estate as I wish I bought. Oh my God. Yeah, the deals that were available with no competition.
Mm-hmm.
You were able to buy properties far below replacement value, right? Mm-hmm. That's really where the magic was.
Right.
I was buying single family homes for the value or sometimes less than the value of the land.
Yeah.
You can't beat that.
It was a great time to be in this business, that's for sure. But, you know, you're right. Starting where you were, you start with the resources you have. And I totally understand where you're going with that. You wish you had the resources that you have now back then. Because that was a time that I don't know that we'll see that again. And I don't know that I'll see it in my lifetime for sure.
We will. I honestly think that we'll see it a lot sooner than we think.
You think so?
Yeah, we as human beings, we think we learn lessons, but we don't. We're going to see another real estate bubble within the next 20 years, I guarantee it.
Wow. Well, let's talk about historic homes. You know, that's never been a niche of mine. I did buy one by accident one time that I thought it was outside of the historic zone, and then I found out, gosh, there are a whole lot of rules and a whole lot of regulations that go along with renovating those types of properties. And there's a lot of paperwork, too. So let's talk about that and why that is a niche that you love so much.
So where I live and where I primarily invest, all of the housing stock is old.
Okay.
Very old. You know, I know plenty of people that solely invest and live in areas where you don't have houses that are older than, let's say, 1980. Well, all the housing stock where I live, it was built in the late 1800s or early 1900s.
Okay.
So the most of the area here is, or at least large pockets of it, is designated as historic. And so a lot of these projects, as long as they're in those historic pockets, they're eligible for historical tax credits. And it's a very powerful financial incentive to renovate properties. And basically the idea behind any tax incentives, right, there's always a reason behind any kind of tax subsidy or tax incentive or any kind of incentive that the government provides for anything. So the idea behind historical tax credits was to incentivize developers to renovate certain properties that have historical value in a way that essentially preserves their historical character. So
okay.
if you have no rules, right, let's say somebody buys a house that was built in the 1900s and it's in rough shape. Well, it's a lot cheaper to go into it, gut the entire place completely, go back with sheetrock, go back with, you know, cheap contractor grade trim,
mm-hmm.
get rid of the wooden windows, the historical windows, and put in, you know, the cheap vinyl windows. So the entire historical character of the property inside and out essentially gets wiped out. So the historical tax credit program is there, and it basically says, if you renovate the property in a certain way, if you preserve certain features of the property, and if you renovate things the way we want you to renovate, we will take all of your qualified rehabilitation costs, and we will give you 45% of those costs as historical tax credits. So what does that mean? Let's say I spent $100,000 on the renovation. $100,000 gets spent on the renovation, and all of these. Now, some costs don't qualify. You know, if I'm doing landscaping or if I'm building a driveway, there's certain costs that will not qualify towards tax credits, but the majority of them do. So let's say I have $100,000 that I just spent on the rehab.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I get 25% of that $100,000 back as state income tax credits and 20% as federal income tax credits. So that means that I have, on the state side, I have $25,000 in credits that offsets $25,000 of my state tax liability. Not income, it doesn't offset my income, it offsets my liability. So to really simplify things, if I'm in a 50% tax bracket, that $25,000 in tax credits offsets $50,000 of my income.
Wow.
Right, so it's pretty powerful. Now, the other thing that a lot of developers do, especially with bigger projects, is they take these tax credits, especially state credits, because they're easier to sell, and they sell them on the secondary market. So instead of me using these tax credits, I will sell them to somebody else that maybe has a much higher income and needs the credits. I can sell it to them, and so instead of me over time using up these credits, especially on the state side, it takes a while to work your way through these credits because usually mm-hmm. state income tax rates are around 5%. Instead, you sell these credits, you usually sell them at, 75, 80, 85 cents on the dollar, and you mm-hmm. get cash right away. So it massively, massively offsets the cost of your rehabilitation.
Well, I've never heard of that before. So you can sell your tax credits. I thought they stayed, if you got a tax credit, they stayed with you in your tax return.
No. You can sell these credits. Now, it's a lot easier to sell state credits.
Mm-hmm.
With the federal credits, if you don't hold on to the property, let's say I renovate the property and I sell it in 2 years, the government will claw back the federal credits. So the federal
okay.
credits only buy if I hold on to the property for 5 years.
Okay.
So it becomes harder to sell the federal credits because whoever is buying my credits has to have very reasonable assurance that I will still own the property 5 years from now.
Right.
I won't go bankrupt. I won't get foreclosed on because if any of those things happen, they've already paid me cash for the credits, but the government is going to come to them and claw the credits back. So it's a lot easier to sell state. And,
okay.
and what a lot of the big developers do is they'll go out, they'll do these massive apartment conversions. They'll take a massive warehouse or factory and convert it to lofts. And, they have millions and millions of dollars in these state credits. They'll go out and sell them, and it's a huge inflow of cash into the project.
Mm-hmm. That's just fascinating because now I know that you said you're moving into new construction. We had an investor at our RIA meeting not too long ago that builds large new apartment communities, subsidized housing type of communities. And I know there are some huge tax credits out there in that world too.
Yeah, and those are probably low-income housing tax credits. That's a mm-hmm. totally separate program.
Yeah.
Than historical, the historical tax credits, as far as I know, at least in my state, they only apply to renovations. They don't apply to new construction because obviously you're not preserving anything when you're
right.
building new. But for new construction, I know the low-income housing tax credits, that's a huge, huge, huge thing for developers.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I remember from the house that I renovated was that they had a picture, an old picture, and over the front door was just like a stoop kind of, or maybe a step or two. I can't remember, but it wasn't really a porch. But there had been some type of, wasn't a porch, but I don't know what you would call it, a little cover over that stoop there. And that was one of the things that they wanted me to put back, to put the house back to, so that it looked like this picture.
Yeah, and that's part of the process, and so that's really the trade-off. You buy a property, it's your property, and you say, well, I should be able to do whatever I want with it. But if you're applying for historical tax credits, for example, then all of a sudden you've got somebody that's dictating to you how you're allowed to renovate and what you can and can't do. And that's the trade-off. Mm-hmm. If you want their money, you got to do things their way.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't know about the tax credits at the time, so that was a long time ago. I know that they had to go and get permits, and they had to approve everything. You know, like you said, you had to put back wood windows and all of the things that would have that were the character of the house and the way it would have been built back in the late 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
That's just
yeah. Yeah, it can be a pain sometimes because there are certain things that, you know, you buy a house with 60-year-old windows in it, single pane wood windows.
Yeah.
They're just leaking air. They're horribly they're incredibly energy inefficient.
Mm-hmm.
They make you restore those windows.
Yeah.
And which is expensive, and you don't have an energy efficient product at the end. So it's not all rainbows and roses. there's some trade-offs there.
For sure. So you mentioned that you're going into new construction now. Does that mean that you're going to give up the type of renovations that you're doing with the historical homes? Are you just going to add new construction in the mix?
No, I'm adding new construction in the mix.
Okay.
The supply of cheap renovation projects has obviously dwindled to at least a certain degree over the last few years as the market, you know, has started improving and more people jumped in. So it's just something I'm adding into the mix that I'm actually really starting to like. And new construction is so much easier versus renovations from a project management standpoint. Mm-hmm. When you're renovating a house, there's always surprises. You're troubleshooting.
Mm-hmm.
When you're building new, you've got a set of plans. You just follow those plans, and there's no surprises. I'm usually out of the ground, and between when I start digging my footings and they start pouring my foundation to when I've got people living in my properties, the last round of new construction projects I've completed, it was 4 months.
Oh, that's fast.
Yeah, four months from when I started digging the footings for the foundation, I had people living in my project. So new construction is easier than renovations in a lot of cases.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you.
Yeah, and you end up with a really good quality product. So everything I'm doing, I'm primarily holding as rentals. So for me, my end cost basis may be a little bit higher than if I found a cheap renovation, but what I end up with is a really good quality, energy efficient, maintenance-free rental product at the end of the day. So I'm spending a little bit more than if I just focused on finding cheap renovations. But for my rental portfolio, that's really the optimal product that I can put into it because it's high quality. I'm putting everything is new. All my systems, plumbing, electrical, HVAC, my foundations, everything is new. Roof is new. Siding is new. I have a product that I can put people into, and as long as I screen and put good tenants into them, I'm not going to hear from these people for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.